Flying presents all sorts of unique challenges for pilots, and depending on whether a multi-crew or single-pilot operations, need to be managed carefully. In this episode, I'm going to have a look at five multi-crew, lower safe penetration issues or incident reports and how they can be mitigated as a multi-crew or single-crew operation. That and more coming right up. So strap in and let's get into it.
Star 9000-1013, KFO 25. Coordinating aileron and rudder, bank balance, bank pressure rolling to 30 degrees. That's 30 degrees there.
Over, somewhere 291-331.
G'day everyone, and welcome to episode 125 of the Flight Training Australia podcast. From flying out to the $100 hamburger to circumnavigating the country, this is the podcast all about flight training and flying in Australia and beyond. I'm your host, Trent Robinson. G'day. Welcome to another episode. Oh, wow. So much has been happening this last week. Firstly, just recently, great to catch up with Michael Smith. For those who don't know who he is, he is flying his L-65 Sea Bear, named the Southern Sun, around Australia, celebrating the first circumnavigational flight around Australia, which occurred 100 years ago to the date. He is recreating the flight, flying to all the same locations, even to the point where 100 years ago they had an engine failure and it took 10 days to get a new one out to them onto a beach near Carnarvon. And he's going to sit in Carnarvon for 10 days. That is absolute commitment. And I hope he finds some things to do there. He's, lovely guy, doing amazing things. He's got some more amazing adventures in store coming up. So if you'd like to meet Michael on the remainder of his trip, he's in the Broome as you're listening to this now, assuming you're listening to this on the 29th of April, that is. But he's going to be heading down. You can catch up with him on the Southern Sun journey, and also the website is on the episode description as well, www.southernsun.voyage, and you can follow all that there as well. I was also very honoured to be joined by family and friends to be finally presented with the Flight Instructor of the Year Award, which was presented by CASA and Australian Flying Magazine, Peter Ball and Steve Hitchin. Thank you for coming across. My parents and students, friends, thank you for joining me. And everyone who sent messages of support and gratitude online and emails, phone calls, messages, like just fantastic. I love you all. Thank you so much to everybody. Anyone I've had any part in their career or their flying or just shared special moments along the way, it's been so wonderful to hear from you all, and thank you very much for that. And I look forward to doing more amazing work there. And I'm also been honoured to be part of a fantastic forum coming up, organised by Paul Strike at Strike Aviation in Caboolture there. It's going to be a 5-day forum. Now, just to clear things up, there is the first 3 days. The first day is June 28th, which is a Friday, and it is not one to be missed. It's a day spent with Richard Stoll. If you don't know who he is, go and Google him right after this podcast. And he is a wealth of knowledge, specializing in stall, spin, GPRT, that sort of thing. And I've already had the pleasure chatting with him and Paul, going through what we're going to be doing in this seminar, workshops, and conference. Oh, it's going to be fantastic. And Rich, hopefully pending CASA certification, the certificate of validation, is going to be 2 days, then the Saturday, Sunday, to fly with Richard. And what an opportunity that will be. He's flying down from the States, and it will be really fantastic. We're also hopefully going to be joined by Mark Griffield, who is a UPRT specialist from England, also doing some amazing work there. And there'll also, of course, be local representatives joining in and all that as well. So a really great day. Check that one out. And finally, the 2-day workshop, which will be on the 1st and 2nd of July. First job providers, 135 operators, airlines, flight schools, all that sort of thing. Any one representative of those industries that want to come together working on the theme of making a better pilot. So I encourage anyone who is listening that is a check-in training, flight instructor, head of operations, head of flying ops, senior base, anything to do with any of those organizations, there is all work that we can do to improve the training syllabus that's being provided. Or more so, we don't think that there's really a problem with the syllabus as much as there is in the delivery of it. And these are ways that we can really get together. It's a no blame, no finger pointing. It's just let's do things better, because ultimately it is for the safety and the lives of those that we train, and we need to get it right. So uprtconference.com for all the information. There's a link at the top for the 2-day industry seminar. Fully encourage you to get on board, do that. I will be there and look forward to meeting all of you there. All right. Big intro and a big episode. Lots to talk about coming up right now. And this is a topic I've wanted to talk about for some time. And I've just been waiting for the right time to do it. And I don't know, the universe has said, well, hey, here's some HSB reports that have all been along a very similar theme. And that is descents, or unplanned, unscheduled, unintended descents below MSA or lower safes. So whether you're IFR, which is probably the main application, but this is also applicable to some PPL night VFR flying as well, especially those using autopilots and automation and that sort of stuff. So what I've done is I've gone through and I've picked a bunch of incidents, which could very well have been accidents, but fortunately they're all incidents that have happened over the period of time. Again, I will link these individual ATSB reports in the episode description if you want to read the full expanded reports. I'm just going to paraphrase, obviously, and we'll have a bit of a chat about them all at the end. So the first one happened, it's probably one of the more recent reports that have come out, but this is a flight below glide slope approaching into Sydney Airport on an ILS. So back on October 24th in 2022, a Saab 340 aircraft operated by Link Airways was approaching Sydney Airport from Canberra, obviously a passenger scheduled flight. The aircraft was cleared for the ILS onto runway 34 left. An instrumentation fault led to an erroneous glide slope indication being displayed to the pilots without any failure indication. So if you're not quite sure what a glide slope or an ILS does, it's basically left and right and up and down indications. So if you imagine a little crosshair, you want to keep them perfectly aligned in a perfect plus sign. You don't want that bar rising up too high or too low or too far left or too right. So it's about keeping them bang on. And normally if there is a failure of the glide slope or anything else, you're going to get some sort of identification failure or possible glide slope alert, if I, again, obviously depending on the aircraft you're flying and the kind of equipment on board. So no failure indication at this time and an erroneous glide slope indication. So the crew, unaware of the fault, observed that the aircraft did not begin to descend as expected. So this basically put them high on the approach profile. So probably the better position to be in, right? The captain then increased the descent rate, re-engaged the autopilot, which maintained the increased descent rate. This then resulted in the aircraft's descending significantly below glide slope, triggering a ground proximity warning system alert, which would be something like terrain. Recognizing the unstable approach, the crew then initiated a missed approach and subsequently identified the erroneous glide slope indications, and they then completed a landing using a different approach type, which is probably a good call. There's something wrong with the ILS. Let's not do another one. Let's just do something else that should work, monitor it more closely, and all worked out well. The next one, a Fokker descending below minimum safe altitude and the importance of monitoring auto flight systems. So on August the 30th, 2023, an Alliance Airlines operated Fokker 100 was conducting a standard instrument arrival into Adelaide's runway 323 from Brisbane. During the approach, the flight management system failed to capture the minimum safe altitude of 3,800 feet between two waypoints. The flight crew noticed the descent below the minimum safe altitude, attempted to stop it by commanding the aircraft to hold the current altitude and then increasing the selected altitude on the autopilot, but the descent persisted. With the aircraft still descending, the first officer disconnected the autopilot and initiated a climb, which resulted in them being about 480 feet below the minimum safe altitude. The crew then completed the approach and landed without further incident. All right, third one is entitled Perceived Time Pressure Contributing to Charter Flights Descent Below Safe Altitude. This one occurred on May 24, 2023 in New Zealand. A Pioneer operated Embraer E190 was on approach into Napier in New Zealand during a non-scheduled passenger flight from Brisbane with a stop in Auckland. Uninspected icing conditions were encountered during the approach, prompting the flight crew to conduct relevant checklists. After passing the intermediate approach fix, the flight crew noticed that the aircraft was high. To correct this, they decided to conduct a big descending orbit and rejoined the profile at the appropriate altitude for an uneventful landing. However, the orbit took the aircraft beyond the lateral tolerances of the approach segment, resulting in the aircraft flying below the 3,300-foot minimum safe altitude. So for this particular approach, what that means is the approach could be down, let's just pretend, like a valley, and it has certain altitude protections within the tolerances of the navigation aid being used, either a VOR or a GPS. If you go outside of that, there could be high terrain outside of the protection of that particular approach, which could give you controlled flight into terrain. It's happened before, flying into mountains or other such terrain. All right, the next one. Fatigue and high workload likely factors in a freight flight's descent below minimum safe altitude. This one, January the 5th, 2023. Two pilots operating a Pioneer BA-146 were conducting a night flight from a freight flight from Brisbane to Rockhampton. During a straight-in required navigation performance or RNP approach to Rockhampton's runway 33, the crew discontinued due to low cloud. After a missed approach, the crew entered a holding pattern at 3,500 feet, lower than the captain's normal descent practice. During the second approach, the aircraft descended below the minimum safe altitude for the first two segments of the RNP approach. Because they were used to descending higher or further out, they botched the landing and botched the descent. And I've seen this happen multiple times on IPC flights where someone's descended 5 miles sooner than they should have. So the captain's early descent in this case was based on incorrect application of the preferred descent technique and top of descent point, while the first officer's incorrect mental model contributed to not identifying the early descent. And finally, descent below segment minimum safe altitude involving a Fokker 100 near Adelaide Airport. This is on the 30th of August 2023. Flight crew of an Alliance Airlines Fokker 100 operating a Virgin flight from Brisbane to Adelaide commenced the standard instrument arrival into Adelaide. During the arrival with the autoflight system engaged, the aircraft descended below a segment minimum safe altitude of 3,800 feet. The captain commanded the aircraft to hold its current altitude, but the first officer observed that the descent continued and subsequently disconnected the autopilot and initiated a climb. The autoflight system then captured the lateral track of the localizer and then intercepted the glide slope when the autopilot was reconnected. Despite consulting with the aircraft and flight management computer manufacturers, the reason for this aircraft not leveling at the selected altitude could not be determined. All right, so five incidents there, all multi-crew, and have all resulted in uncommanded autopilot inputs or descents below lower safe due to potential inattention. So what do they all have in common? So the first one I've sort of extracted out of this is automation dependency and monitoring. Now, in all the incidents, there was a reliance on automated flight systems. However, in each case, there were instances where automation did not behave as expected, leading to deviations from the intended flight path. So I have an idea of talking about autopilots again soon, another topic I want to talk to. And I find the term autopilot a little bit misleading because it's kind of like a calculator, isn't it? It's like you put the wrong numbers in and you get the wrong answer. And autopilots are not automatically replacing pilots. They are following inputs and instructions. And I've seen countless times where people have programmed or armed or set the GPS, set the autopilot, expecting it to do something, and almost handed over full control to it without actually monitoring it. So it's definitely a topic I want to talk about later. But there's no doubt that pilots need to continuously monitor automated systems and be prepared to intervene when necessary. one reason why I don't think we're quite ready to go full robotic pilot. No one's really ready for that, I don't think. I don't want it, not apart from being out of a job. Anyway, moving on. Number two, incorrect mental models and monitoring errors. So in two incidents there, pilots' mental models of the aircraft's position or descent profile were incorrect, thinking they were safe but indeed were not and flew outside tolerances. This leads to monitoring errors, highlighting the importance of pilots having accurate situational awareness and understanding of the aircraft state at all times. And this can just be as simple as knowing whether you're east or west or north or south of an airport. It can be where we are in relation to other terrain, obstacles, traffic, not being able to process where traffic is or disacknowledging traffic radio calls, thinking it has nothing to do with you when indeed it certainly can. All right, number three, fatigue and workload. So fatigue and workload factors or high workload factors into most of these incidents in some way, shape or form, but definitely two of them there. So fatigue can impair cognitive function and decision-making, while high workload can lead to task saturation and reduced capacity to manage unexpected events. So adequate workload and rest management are crucial for flight crew performance and safety, and we obviously have flight and duty times and all sorts of other protections in place for these exact reasons. Number four, procedures and decision-making. So in several incidents, there were deviations from standard procedures or decisions made under time pressures. Again, highlighting that pilots need to adhere to established procedures and take the time to reassess situations and develop new plans if needed, especially when unexpected tasks arise. And this is when we're all put into the test. It's easy to fly to A to B to C back to A again, but it's when things come up that we're not expecting that the training kicks in, our procedures and adherence to those procedures are met and followed and don't add to the Swiss cheese and make things worse. Number five, communication and crew coordination. So effective communication and coordination among flight crew members are essential for managing complex situations and ensuring a shared understanding of the aircraft's state and intentions. Clear communication and coordination can help mitigate these errors and facilitate timely corrective actions, which is absolutely crucial. And in a multi-crew scenario, listening to each other, if there's someone that says something and flags something that's unsafe, you get heard and you get listened and it gets dealt with. Finally, number six, training and recurrent training. The incidents underscore the importance of ongoing training and recurrent training for flight crews to maintain proficiency in handling various scenarios and emergencies. Regular training can absolutely help improve decision-making skills, situational awareness, and the ability to manage automation effectively. And I've talked about this time and time again, and it is something that I am absolutely an advocate for, that we need to practice the things we don't get to practice often. And this is where flight reviews, proficiency checks, and all that sort of thing absolutely come into play. So addressing all these common issues takes a holistic approach, involves improvements in technology, training, procedures, and organizational and personal cultures. It's essential for aviation stakeholders to collaborate in implementing measures to enhance safety and prevent similar incidents in the future. All right, but hang on. We're not all multi-crew. We don't have two pilots on board. Yeah, and this is precisely my point. So if this can happen when there's two pilots on board, what do you reckon about you flying by yourself? All right, flying solo poses unique challenges compared to flying with a co-pilot. There's no one else in the cockpit to share the workload, to cross-check your actions, or provide support and spot mistakes. So here now is some tailored pieces of advice for you guys who are out there by yourself to mitigate the risks associated with the common issues highlighted in the incidents that I've just talked about. Number one, enhance situational awareness. So single pilots must maintain a heightened level of situational awareness at all times. This goes from starting up the aircraft, even pre-flighting and flight planning, right the way through. They say it's not over until the aircraft is turned off, shut down, that's what I'm trying to say, chocked, locked, and put away for the night. There are things that can happen anywhere, anytime. So constantly scanning instruments, navigation displays, external surroundings to stay aware of the aircraft's position, its altitude, speed, GPS flight automated functions, anything to do with that, need to be mindful of and aware and then ready to act accordingly. Number two, limit automation reliance. So why automation can be a valuable tool for single pilots, believe me, autopilot is fantastic. It's essential not to become overly reliant on it. It is information in, information out. Understand the limitations of automated flight systems and be prepared to manually fly the aircraft when necessary, especially during critical phases of flight. And I will talk about autopilot use more in a coming episode soon, so I'm not going to expand on that one now, but I think that's relatively straightforward for now. Number three, practice effective task management. So learn to prioritize tasks based on their importance and time sensitivity. Breaking down tasks into manageable chunks and allocate sufficient time and attention to each. Avoid multitasking unnecessarily and focus on one task at a time if possible to maintain effectiveness and prevent errors. And I can see this hopefully is resonating with some of you thinking who's gone and done a go around and focused more on making the radio call than getting the gear up and the flaps up and climbing away. Seems to be one of the most common poorly prioritized tasks that I see routinely. Number four, maintain rest and manage fatigue. Single pilots must prioritize rest and manage fatigue effectively. Ensure adequate sleep before flights, schedule regular breaks during long flights, and be vigilant for signs of fatigue, such as decreased alertness or impaired decision-making. Sometimes it's not worth pushing on, okay? Flying all night, flying all day, okay? There might not be flight and duty time limitations for private ops, that sort of thing, but doesn't make it any, or make you any less vulnerable to the things we've been talking about here. Five, adhere to standard operating procedures. So establish and follow standard operating procedures for all phases of flight. They provide a structured approach to managing various situations and can help maintain consistency and safety, especially when flying solo. And this doesn't matter whether you're a private pilot or a commercial pilot. These procedures of where you've been trained are there for a reason. They're not just because you're a student pilot and you ditch it all once you become licensed. In leading to this, number six, utilizing checklists. Use checklists to guide pre-flight, in-flight and post-flight procedures. Checklists help ensure that critical tasks are not overlooked or forgotten, serving as a valuable tool for single pilots to maintain thoroughness and accuracy. And one of the best things I learned at CareFlight, especially for when we're at 3-4 o'clock in the morning, we're tired, it's been a long night, been doing some high workload, high stress stuff, potential storms and who knows what else going on in the wet season. That checklist was our single stopgap measure to missing something because we would be able to convince ourselves that we've done it. But hey, it could have been the flight before, the day before. Sometimes things all sort of blend into one. So checklists, very poorly used. Now, I'm not saying that a 152 or a 172 is, or even just a light single 210 is a particularly difficult aircraft to fly. It's not about that. It is about using the checklist to make sure we don't make mistakes, because I can tell you now the ATSB is full of people who didn't think they would make a mistake and now they're an incident or accident report. So we have checklists for a reason. They are there. Are they going to stop things entirely from happening? No, but they go a long way. Seven, seek additional training and proficiency. So invest in additional training and proficiency checks to enhance your skills and confidence as a single pilot. Consider participating in scenario-based training, flight simulation, or either mentorship programs, anything like that, to improve your decision-making and problem-solving abilities. And again, like I say, this is where flight reviews and flight checks come up. They are a great chance to practice the things that you don't do day to day. That's what it's there for. Number eight, stay connected and communicate. Maintain communication with air traffic control, flight service stations, other aviation authorities, get updates, weather information and assistance with when needed. Additionally, consider using flight following services or mobile phone apps, etc., to maintain or enhance your situational awareness and access other information to keep you in the loop. 9. Be prepared for contingencies. Anticipate and plan for potential changes or contingencies with emergencies that may arise in flight. Carry your appropriate equipment, such as survival gear like life jackets, communication devices, first aid kits, navigation aids, and familiarize yourself with the procedures and escape routes. Something that's definitely more of an IFR thing and high terrain locations, but don't just go buzzing into somewhere. Know the area, know where the safety escape routes are and how the terrain and land affects the approach, the departure, the takeoff, the climb in your local area. Finally, 10, know your limits and exercise caution. Recognize your personal limits and capacities as a single pilot. Avoid pushing yourself beyond your comfort zone, not everybody else's, but yours, or your skill level, and exercise caution when faced with challenging conditions or unfamiliar situations or pressures. When in doubt, err on the side of caution and prioritize your safety above all else. All right, heaps to unpack there, but by following these pieces of advice, single pilots, multi-crew pilots can mitigate the risks associated with flying either solo, dual, or in a multi-crew environment and enhance the safety during flight. Maintaining vigilance, adherence to procedures, effective decision-making, and self-awareness are all key principles for safe flight operations. All right, guys. Hope you got something out of that. Maybe one to listen to again. If you've got any questions, comments, feel free to let me know. You know where to reach me. Remember, on Spotify, if you're on your phone or iPad, you can leave comments for every episode that you listen to. Apple's doing something very similar soon. You can also leave me an Apple review. I love seeing them. I love reading them. I just wish I could reply to them, but I absolutely do get them. So thank you for that. Some of you have come on board on Patreon. Thank you for doing that. That means the world to me. And if you'd like to support the show, yes, it's free, but, you know, buy me a coffee once a month or something like that. Everything goes towards the equipment and travel expenses and other things that I go to produce content for you both here and on YouTube. And there's some very exciting projects coming up there as well, which I really look forward to bringing out to you soon. All right, guys, that is it. Until next time, be safe and blue skies. And most importantly, remember the golden rule. Aviate, navigate, communicate. Cheers, everyone.